The following is a duplicate of Tape 2, Side 1 of an interview conducted with Gilbert Leung for the Southern California Chinese American Oral History Project.
Style dinner, I feel that we were one of the first to introduce that in Chinatown. Previous to that, patrons would come to a Chinese restaurant and each person would order his own dish. And then finally, we got the idea that they would order several dishes and share them. But the family style dinner was a set menu where there was a house soup, and you, no matter whether you were a party of two or four or six people in your party, you had a variety of four or five dishes. And they always said, well, for six you get egg foo young. That's where that line comes from. And that seemed to encourage more people to come down, especially families, and they take advantage of this family style dinner serving.
How much were they?
The prices ranged from 50 cents, 75, to a dollar and a quarter. I think we had four dinner set at those prices.
Now, what did you get for the 50 cents?
For a 50 cent dinner, you got fried rice, you got pork chow mein, you had a patty of egg foo young, and I think two or three fried shrimp per person.
My goodness, that's more.
And house soup and fortune cookies for dessert. That was the 50 cent dinner. And then it graduated as, I think you, on the top dinner, you got almond duck and almond chicken. And of course the fried rice and peas. I think you got peas. And each dinner was complete in itself. It was just the changing of the dishes.
Uh-huh. You added on as with each.
And of course this, we're talking about the early 30s.
I see. Okay.
33, 4, 5. And then gradually the prices went up.
Okay. Now, how were wages set? You know, your father had to hire workers and chef.
How were they set? There was no union.
They had different restaurants. How?
There was no such thing as a union. When you hired this man, he said, well, I was getting so much at this other place. If you want me to work for you, I'd be this much.
Mm-hmm.
And then you probably negotiate and finally end up with something suitable to both parties. Waiters were paid a minimum so much a week, and then their take was mainly from tips.
Did they ever get wage increases or anything like that?
They weren't regulated like after 6 months or a year automatically. No, it was all touch and go, play by ear sort of thing.
Now, did your father have to provide meals for his workers?
When you're in the restaurant, then yes, you provide three meals for them.
And then what were the hours that people worked, hired?
Well, if you opened for lunch, which would be 11 o'clock, generally, a man worked 10 hours in those days, in order to get in the 10 hours, and so it would work well for the house. Occasionally, a man would work through the lunch hour, and then take a two-hour break, and then come back, and then maybe the second cook takes over, the third cook takes over, and then by rotation, you work it out equalizes and they get a rest or a break.
Mm-hmm. Did they ever go back? You know, did your father make trips, say, to China, business trips?
In the restaurant business, we did not have to make trips to the Orient, because most of your buying of food supply are from either the local suppliers or San Francisco.
You ordered
you bought in larger quantities from San Francisco, and it would be shipped down, and you invariably would have to end up with a warehouse of some sort to for instance, your bamboo would come in cases, and you'd buy that in a greater, larger quantity, and you take advantage of price changes.
Oh, you mean the bamboo shoots?
The bamboo shoots in cans.
They
probably wouldn't be the round number six can. It would be in the square, large tin, and your mushrooms and tea, and the dry bean curd, and all of that would come in larger quantities. Most restaurant operators feel that they buy in quantities, they can buy at a better and save and make more money that way.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't.
What customers were, did your restaurant cater to mostly Chinese or Caucasians?
I would say the greater percentage of restaurant customers were people who came down to Chinatown for a Chinese dinner, Caucasian.
I see.
But in that we served Chow Now also, we had a good patronage of Chinese, especially on weekends.
This would be Saturday and
Saturday and Sunday.
Now, did your father have a chance to go to church then with his business being open on Sundays?
Yes, in the afternoon.
And then
as far as I can observe, all through those years, church service was always 2 in the afternoon. That was after your busy lunch. And then as we got busier and busier, we would alternate, and it wasn't that everyone. One of the family got to go every week.
Now, when did church service eventually change to a earlier time?
I think now, the last 15 or so years, most of the churches have their services now in the morning.
I see. Well, prior to that, it was from two to four.
Mm-hmm.
Now, did your father belong to any other organization? You just mentioned the CACA.
No, the CACA and the Gongjiao.
Uh-huh.
And then when he was in the market business, the Merchants Association down there. When he was in Chinatown, the restaurant business, the Tsinghua.
I see.
Those are the only organizations that I recall.
Was he ever active in politics since he was here in America prior to the revolution?
Chinese during those years. He, having belonged to the CACA, he took great pride in voting. That was quite something for a Chinese to be voting. My mother didn't vote. She wasn't a citizen. And we weren't old enough to vote. But his association with the CACA, and then going to conventions, he attended several conventions, and I think once was in New York and in San Francisco a couple of times. That was a big thing in his life. We had to get him new suits and suitcases and a fedora hat and so forth, and send him off to the convention. And he'd come home with these big group pictures. I think we still have them.
But he was in
some of the conventions were here in Los Angeles, and then the local chapter would play host, and I think some of the banquets were in our restaurant.
Now, what was the membership in the CACA?
I never did belong, but when they had the conventions, it would number in, with delegates and all. Oh, I remember one of the evenings, the what do you call the where the public and the wives and the friends all attended, was held at the Breakfast Club on Los Feliz, and they filled that place. So these conventions were looked up to as big things.
They were held once a year.
Once a year, and they would select a different city
each
time to rotate around.
And that must have been very exciting then. Now, did the CACA do any other, have any other activities in which your family took part?
I don't know of any others.
Mm-hmm. Was he ever active, say, in or interested in China politics?
In China politics?
Uh-huh. Right. Because this was...
He read the Chinese newspaper avidly.
Uh-huh.
He kept abreast of, you know, what was, who the warlord was taking over what part, and
mm-hmm.
who was knocking over whom, that sort of thing, through the Chinese newspaper. But as far as taking part in any politics, no.
Mm-hmm.
But he did vote with great pride.
What was he? Was he a Republican,
he voted
a Democrat?
Republican.
Uh-huh. How about other Chinese? Do you know whether or not there were other Chinese who were voting? I mean, were there many? Did he ever mention?
Well, I would say all those connected with the CACA
uh-huh.
would be that minded. And politically aware.
Uh-huh.
But those that didn't belong to the CACA, I think, participated very little. And they just went about their daily lives of raising a family.
Mm-hmm.
And didn't enter into politics at all. Not until just, you know, in the last 20 years did we have anybody run for this and that. Delbert Wong, I think, possibly the first. We didn't have March Fongyu in those days.
No, did your parents ever talk about returning to China?
Oh, yes. Every good Chinese, that's in the back of his mind.
Mm-hmm. Did he want to, I mean, did he ever plan to return to China?
Yes, I would say if the... The change of events, such as the Japanese War, and finally the taking over, you know, the communist takeover,
mm-hmm.
that changed things for all Chinese.
Mm-hmm.
Prior to that, every Chinese would, they came to America with the idea of making money a little faster and sending it back with the exchange advantage. And eventually to go home
mm-hmm.
and enjoy the fruits of his labors in his remaining years in China.
What did your, you mentioned that you, your father just had a brother left in
He had an older brother here.
Oh.
And that brother returned to China.
Right, I see. So he just had a brother then. He didn't, did he have relatives whom he sent money back to?
Yes, that's a common practice among pioneer Chinese,
uh-huh.
because when you left China, you left other members of your family, and here you have a greater opportunity
mm-hmm.
to advance yourself, and invariably you are sending money home to nephews and nieces to go to school for this.
Uh-huh.
For this, that, and the other thing.
Is that what your dad do?
For many years, we would receive letters from these relatives saying that they needed this and they needed that.
Who were some of the relatives that I
used? Mainly on my father's side.
I mean,
nieces
what,
and nephews.
I see.
Nieces and nephews. And more or less, I call them distant
mm-hmm.
relatives.
Now, do you know what sort of things they would ask for?
Money. So that they could get married, so
uh-huh.
that they could put a down payment on something,
mm-hmm.
so they could send a kid to school, because, Uncle, you're in America. You're making it big. Mm-hmm. We need, you know, we need help from you. Oh, we've received many letters.
And your father responded?
As well as he could. Uh-huh. Every year he would send what he could.
Mm-hmm. Now, did he say buy, you know, land over in China with the father returning there?
No, he never got around to that.
Uh-huh.
We never owned any land in China.
How about your mother's side of the family? Did she ever send money back to her relatives?
Yes, that was a dutiful thing for uh-huh. a daughter to do. But that was mainly remembering her parents uh-huh. or her sister. Christmas time, mm-hmm. New Year's, so forth. But she did send for her younger brother, and he lived with us, mm-hmm. and she put him through college here. And then I had a cousin that would be her sister's son
mm-hmm.
that came over. And that's common practice mm-hmm. in those days. You have nephews, you have nieces that come over and stay with you and go to school and maybe help in the business.
Mm-hmm.
They did help in a small way.
Uh-huh.
But they lived with us for years.
I see.
They had a 5-room house. And uh-huh. We doubled up. And we had one or two more people at dinner.
Were they about your same age? Or?
No, this uncle would be my uncle, and my cousin I speak of was my elder brother's age. And they went to USC,
mm-hmm.
Contemporary with my brother.
Now, did you have many other types of family gatherings? For instance, you said your
our family is small. Mm-hmm. We don't have a lot of Leongs in Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. Even today, there aren't too many Leongs. Whereas you take some of the others, mm-hmm. Wong family, the Chan family, my golly, you know, and they start with a large family, and by the time they intermarry and cross-marry and all of that, they have a big clan.
Mm-hmm.
Well, our family is always kept very small.
Now, has your family remained in good health, too? I mean, all through the years when you were growing up?
I would say we've been blessed that way,
mm-hmm.
when none of us ever had serious illnesses.
Now, if there was, say, minor illnesses, what was, you know, your parents' practice to treat?
We generally went to the Western type of medicine. I would make a reservation there. My parents did believe in certain herbs, too.
Mm-hmm. They were herbalists.
They were not herbalists, but being from China, for certain colds and certain
mm-hmm.
illnesses, why there was always the herbs to fall back on, and they all seemed to know something about it. For instance, she would, if she felt that we needed invariably she would make herbs with chicken uh-huh. or herbs with beef to give us further nourishment. I was puny in my younger days. In fact, I was asthmatic.
Mm-hmm.
So through my younger years, I put away a lot of Chinese herbs. Bitter tea.
Well, what I meant was that were there herbalists in town?
There were a few herbalists in town that my mother went to.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Not too many, maybe mm-hmm. 10 or a dozen. And certain ones would be better known than another. There were always several in the Chinatown area itself. But one of the two or three of the most successful herb doctors treated the Caucasian public.
I see.
And Dr. Tom Leung was one of them.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. G.S. Chan was another.
Mm-hmm.
Four or five advertised and had relatively lucrative business with the American public.
Now, the Chinese herbalists whom your mother took to, did the herbalists also, you know, looked at you and prescribe, sold the medicine, or did you then take a prescription and go to
the herb store. The herbalist, and first thing he does is take your pulse. I guess he looks at your tongue and so forth. And you describe the symptoms. And then he puts on his glasses and his brush, and he writes out the prescription. Now, as far as I know, he doesn't sell you the herb. He writes out the prescription to you.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you generally pay him in a red paper money, like the...
How much would it be? Was there a fixed price?
I think it was, it was something nominal, $3 or $5, something like that. I think it must be fixed, the other way. But as I recall, it was done in a red envelope. And then you took that prescription and you went to the herb store like Jining Tong. And the man would turn around, he'd reach up to the top drawer and the bottom drawer, and they had no numbers or names on the drawers, and somehow he always managed to pull out the right amount and put it on this hand scale. Or if you wanted to wait for it, he would brew it in the back, and you would come back after 20 minutes or half hour, I forget how long, and they have the teakwood chairs there. One beautifully carved teakwood chair there with a set tea on each side, you know, and you take your tea there. And then always when you buy the herb, it comes in this white paper. It's not butcher paper, and it's not white paper. It's kind of a wheat-colored paper, and they fold it just a certain way, and the corner was tucked in. There was no string or tape. And always there were two dates that were included in the package, or raisins, and that was after the bitter tea. You cleared your mouth with the raisins or the dates.
Oh, I see. Now, Gilbert, what made you decide to become an architect? Did you?
Oh, I had no preconceived ideas. In the back of my mind, I thought, oh, maybe I ought to follow something in the scientific line, maybe medicine or something. Then when I found out medicine required 8 or more years, I got off of that kick. And my older brother, actually said, maybe you'd like to go into architecture. I didn't even know what architecture was. And in my early years, I never did do very much drawing. I tried a little bit of music. I took a few violin lessons, and that didn't take, so I got off of that. And when he said, maybe architecture, so I just registered at USC as a freshman in architecture. And in your first years, it's very basic. You study the historical cultures. You study Roman, Greek, and that sort of thing. And then you finally, after about the third year, then you start improvising and what you would call designing, basic design. So that's how I got started. And then I, as I said, the depression years came along, and I had to make, I had to cause a break in my college career of, you see, a college of architecture is 5 years.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
And after the third year, I had to work. I worked in the restaurant that the family had started. And
this was the
full-time.
Suzhou restaurant.
It was the Suzhou restaurant facing the plaza on Los Angeles Street, overlooking Tom Gubbins' place where I said he hired all the Chinese extras. And then after working a couple of years, I went back to USC. And there was a break in there where I went to Chouinard Art School and won sort of a summer scholarship. And following the summer,
at Chouinard. I stayed on for, I think it was fully 2 years, and that's where I studied modeling and sculpture from a Merrill Gage, who's still living, sculptor.
Now, what years were these that you were at Chouinard?
I think 33 and 4.
And where was Chouinard located?
Chouinard was located on just south of 7th Street, between 7th and 8th. And I think the street was Parkview. They had their own little building there. It was designed, it was a modern building. It was a real nice art school.
Mm-hmm.
Previous to that, they operated in a big, old house. So this was quite something. It was a new building.
Mm. Now, did your parents, expect, all of their children to attend college? I mean, did they say something? Did they voice, this?
That was always my mother's ambition for mm-hmm. all of us to go to college, and she was a motivating force behind it. And even during the lean years, she would somehow scrape together the tuition for us to make it back to school. And of course, we helped by working.
Mm-hmm.
And in those days, at USC, it was $10 a unit.
Oh!
So, 16 unit was at something like $160, and mm-hmm. plus a little lab fee or library fee. For a whole year, it was a little over $300,
oh.
$330 or $40 for a whole year. We thought that was a lot of money then.
It really was when you think of your 50 cents
right.
house dinner.
And being native born here, uh-huh. we found it was just impossible to get any help from the university. And that kind of rubbed us the wrong way, because we had friends, foreign, overseas Chinese would uh-huh. come over, and dear old Dr. Von Kleinsmith, mm-hmm. open arms, welcome, and they always managed to get either partial scholarships or even full scholarships. But the local born Chinese, to my knowledge, very difficult to get any help from the university in the way of scholarship. Well, we paid our way.
So did the how did you happen to decide on USC?
Because of architecture.
Awesome.
Wanting to study architecture. Uh-huh. And at that time, there were only three schools on the coast that had architectural courses. UC Berkeley and Washington and USC.
Oh, I didn't realize that. Now, did your other brothers attend college?
He attended college and he studied engineering.
This is the...
My older brother.
How about
you? Name was Edward.
Uh-huh.
Being the older one in the family, and then with the lean years coming by, depression, then he had to break into his schooling.
Mm-hmm.
And... like I say, the older brother always gets more responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
So his education was interrupted, and I think it suffered a little. He didn't quite graduate.
How about your other brother and your sister?
My sister graduated from USC. My youngest brother went 2 or 3 years, and then he decided he wanted to go to work.
What did your sister study?
My sister, liberal arts, and I think music major. She played the piano in church.
Oh.
So did my older brother.
Now, was there any thought, for instance, of, discrimination that would affect, your jobs? Or was there any thought like that?
After getting out of college?
Right, or
discrimination.
Even before, was there any awareness, say, of something like this might take place?
I don't think I really personally have ever experienced any real racial discrimination.
Mm-hmm.
in architecture, if you can do the work and if you showed, let's say, talent,
mm-hmm.
why, you were a desirable person to have in somebody's office.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, the pay at that time was, I hate to tell you what we started out earning. You know? And particularly in the field of architecture, the first 2 years practically, you're an apprentice and you work for a very meager salary to gain the experience, just to get inside of an office.
What was
not
the pay
like
life?
Today. My first 2 or 3 months was in an office with no pay. I was like an office boy. I ran errands, I traced, and you put one sheet over another and did some tracing. And after about a 6 months, then you're given a little more responsibility, a little more meaningful things to do. But until you have a couple of years under your belt, you're not much good to anybody, so you're not worth very much.